ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नारद उवाच इति दैत्यपतेर्वाक्यम् दीतिरकारण्यसस्नुषा पुत्रशोकं क्षणा त्यक्त्वा तत्त्वे चित्तम् उदारयत्। श्रीनारद उवाच इति दैत्यपतेर्वाक्यम् दीतिरकारण्यसस्नुषा पुत्रशोकं क्षणा त्यक्त्वा तत्त्वे चित्तम् अधारयत्।
Sri Narada Muni continued, Diti, the mother of Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha, heard the instructions of Hiranyakashipu along with her daughter-in-law, Vrushabhanu, Hiranyaksha's wife. She then forgot her grief over her son's death and thus engaged her mind and attention in understanding the real philosophy of life. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. When a relative dies, one certainly becomes very much interested in philosophy. But when the funeral ceremony is over, one again becomes attentive to materialism. Even daityas, who are materialistic persons, sometimes think of philosophy when some relative meets death. The technical term for this attitude of the materialistic person is smashana vairagya, or detachment in a cemetery or place of cremation. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, four classes of men receive an understanding of spiritual life and God: Artha, the distressed; Jigyasu, the inquisitive; Artharati, one who desires material gain; and Jnani, one who is searching for knowledge. Especially when one is very much distressed by material condition, one becomes interested in God. Therefore, Kunti Devi said in her prayers to Krishna that she preferred distress to a happy mood of life. In the material world, one who is happy forgets Krishna or God. But sometimes, if one is actually pious, but in distress, he remembers Krishna. Queen Kunti Devi therefore preferred distress because it is an opportunity for remembering Krishna. When Krishna was leaving Kunti Devi for his own country, Kunti Devi regretfully said that she was better off in distress because Krishna was always present. Whereas now that the Pandavas were situated in their kingdom, Krishna was going away. For a devotee, distress is an opportunity to remember the Supreme Personality of Godhead constantly. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the seventh canto, second chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Hiranyakashipu, king of the demons. We are reading today from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 2, entitled Hiranyakashipu, King of the Demons. Text 61. We find in the words of Sri Narada Muni how powerful and effective the preaching of Hiranyakashipu was to dispel the darkness of ignorance from his mother, sister-in-law, and other relatives. He knew the philosophy. He presented it effectively. For the purpose of relieving the grief, especially of her mother, his mother. And he did so. Narada Muni tells that she thus engaged her mind and attention in understanding the real philosophy of life. That we are not products of material energy, that we are eternal souls. In those days, even the demons understood this. Even the demons understood that there was a supreme God. They understood that they were spiritual by nature, separate from this physical temporary body, and that they were eternal, full of knowledge, full of bliss. The demons knew this. The difference between the demons and the devotees is, despite knowing this, still they wanted to be controllers, enjoyers, and proprietors in competition with the Supreme God. And because Krishna is the source of remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness, and Krishna reciprocates with everyone by facilitating a particular type of consciousness to fulfill their desires, Krishna gives the demons the conviction that they could kill the Supreme God, that they could compete with him and defeat him. Does that sound contradictory? They know he's the Lord of everything, the source of all that exists. And they know philosophy so well. They know Vedas better than anybody could know Vedas today, as far as memorization and the power to speak. And they could perform such tremendous tapasya and gain great, great mystical powers that nobody could even dream of in today's world. Not ordinary beings, these demons we're talking about. And they know where all that power is coming from. They know it's coming from God. But now that they have it, they want to compete with God. Now, any 5-year-old boy like Prahlad understands that it doesn't make sense. Hiranyakashipu asked Prahlad, "Where do you get your power from?" Prahlad said, from the same place you get your power from. From the same place everyone gets their power from. From the all-powerful, the source of everything. From Vishnu, the Lord. Now, was he telling Hiranyakashipu something he didn't know? He already knew that. But he didn't want to hear it. He was in very serious denial. Why? Because of his motivations. So how we can be covered over by our motivations? And the Lord, who is the Paramatma, the super soul within the heart, he's facilitating a particular type of consciousness, remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness according to our motivations. If anyone desires to be the supreme, even to the point of fighting Vishnu, who's the cause of all causes, the source of everything, the absolute truth, that same Vishnu who's within your heart will pervert your intelligence to actually think you can do it. Yes, Vishnu's God, but if I kill him, then I become God. Yes? Some kind of really perverted politics. So if I assassinate the prime minister, then I will become the prime minister. Yes? If I overthrow the government. These coups, they overthrow the government. Happens all the time in Africa. It's happened so many places in the world. In fact, India did it. We want to overthrow the government and take the post. And usually the prime people who are organizing the overthrowing of government, their ambition is to be in control. And historically, oftentimes, it happens. You overthrow the government, the general who takes it, he becomes the president or the king, Hare Krishna. So the same mentality, these demons, like Hiranyakashipu, are thinking toward God. Yes, God's the source of everything, but if I kill him, I become God. Hare Krishna. Makes no sense. But common sense is not very common. It never was, and it probably never will be. Common sense is the most uncommon thing. And why is that? Because of our desires. When we have perverted desires, then the Lord, in order to facilitate our trying to fulfill those desires, he has to pervert our intelligence. He has to pervert our whole perspective of reality. Otherwise, there's no hope that our perverted desires could ever be fulfilled. So what Hiranyakashipu doesn't understand is he's just a puppet. He has a desire, but the Lord in his heart is facilitating, and the modes of material nature are empowering him by the Lord's will, or let us say by the Lord's arrangement. The Lord does not will that anyone becomes cruel and demoniac. But the Lord wills that the living entity has such freedom and that material nature will facilitate. That is his arrangement. So Hiranyakashipu, he's asking Prahlad, where do you get your power from? He already knew. But he was covered over. And when Prahlad Maharaj told him, from the same place you do, from the Lord, from Vishnu, he was outraged. That was the most intolerable thing that could possibly be said to him.
said, let me see your Lord save you now, I will kill you. Hare Krishna smashed his fist against a pillar in great anger, charged at Prahlad to sever his head. The pillar was shaking. The whole palace started shaking. This screaming sound that nobody ever heard before echoed in all directions. Hiranyakashipu was bewildered. He was looking around. Where is that noise coming from? What's happening? Who is it? And out from the pillar, Sri Narasimhadev, the Supreme Absolute Truth. And even he's having darshan with this most ferocious, opulent, powerful form of the Lord in his most angry mood. Now, Krishna is all beautiful, but he's supreme in everything he does. When the Lord is angry, he is supremely angry. Whatever anger even the greatest demons have is only infinitesimal part and parcel of the anger that Vishnu could have. Can you imagine standing before the Lord revealing his supreme anger? And all his anger is directed toward you. That was the darshan Hiranyakashipu had. Now, for most of us, we would definitely bow our heads down and say, please be merciful to me and forgive me, my Lord. But Hiranyakashipu, because of his desire and because of his false pride, he was so blinded. He was convinced in his heart that he would kill Narasimhadev. And he attacked him with a sword. like a moth flying into a blazing fire. And he really was convinced he could win. Where did that conviction come from? Now, all of us, we're reading Srimad Bhagavatam. We're hearing about what this amazing form of the Lord. And everyone knows he's going to lose, except him. Naham prakasha saravasya yoga maya samavrata mudo yam nabijanati. Bhagavad Gita explains how this potency of maya just completely covers our intelligence. Maya means that which is not. And so many levels and degrees by which we come under this deluding potency. But scientists today, they don't have even a fraction of the intelligence or common sense that the demons of yesterday did. They don't believe there is a God. Hiranyakashipu did. They don't believe there is a soul. Hiranyakashipu did. And they are the greatest educators in the college and universities, writing textbooks, giving lectures, influencing society. And Prabhupada quotes that one very famous atheist who is making so many followers. And part of his preaching was he would stand in a public place and get hundreds of people to gather around him, and he would say, God, if you really exist, then strike me dead now. I challenge you. I dare you. If you're all powerful, strike me dead, you rascal. Come on, come on, fight, let's go. Strike me dead. Nothing happens. He'd say, I see there is no God. If he would have God, he would have done it. If he's God, he heard me. Why didn't he do anything? He's a coward. God can't be a coward, so there is no God. People, oh, that makes sense. Very good, very good. Prabhupada quoted the communists. They would create, by their own political manipulation, poverty. So people didn't have food. And then they would come, so much exploitation. They would create a poverty so that people didn't have food. Government has that power. And then they would tell people, oh, you believe in God? Well, pray to God to give you some bread. So they pray. And no bread was there. And they'd say, pray to us. Give me bread. So they're hungry. What are they going to do? They say, please, Mr. Communist, give me bread. And right then, they would just ring a bell and a truck would come and distribute so much bread. Say, so, what is this God? Worship us. We are your authority. And people believed them. It was very practical philosophy. But we find in all of the scriptures that the great demons who were really, really powerful, they knew the soul, they knew God, they knew everything. The only problem is their desire. And it's so amazing how the Lord covers you over according to your desire. Duryodhana, he knew that Krishna's God. And Krishna's coming to plead with him. Give 5 villages to the Pandavas. And he's saying, no, I will not. He knows he's God. Duryodhana, actually, when he saw that Krishna wasn't cooperating, he ordered his soldiers to arrest Krishna and put him in jail. And right in front of Duryodhana, soldiers attacked him, and Krishna manifested his Virat Rupa, a universal form, which is brighter than thousands of suns, with arms and legs and heads and heavy, unbelievable. So the soldiers ran back. Duryodhana was just in great reverence. But still, even after seeing the universal form, he wouldn't listen to Krishna. Krishna's telling him, you're going to be destroyed if you don't be fair with the Pandavas. He still wouldn't do it. He went in the battlefield to fight against the Pandavas when Krishna, leading the forces on the chariot. And practically everyone on the Kuru armies knew that Krishna's God, to some extent or another. The 11th chapter, he showed the universal form. Common sense is very uncommon. Because of our ulterior motives. Essentially because of our insincerity. If there was one thing Srila Prabhupada emphasized more than anything, it was that we should be sincere. Take this Krishna consciousness very seriously. Because if Krishna sees that we are sincere, Krishna gives us clear intelligence. We can understand things very simply. If we're insincere, the simplest things are so complicated and unapproachable. If we're sincere, the most complicated things are very simple. Katanchana smrite yasmin. In Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is said, for one who takes shelter of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu sincerely, even the most difficult things become very simple to understand and to execute. But for one who does not take shelter of the Lord, even the simplest things become inconceivable and impossible. Isn't that true? The logic that you're not the body, but you're the soul, is so easy to understand. Why people cannot understand it? And even if they do understand it theoretically, why they don't really believe it? These are two things we were discussing a little yesterday. There's understanding and there's believing. You can understand something intellectually, but to actually have faith in it takes the grace of God. Faith does not come simply by our intellectualization. You can write many books. I remember when I was giving lectures in colleges in America in the 1980s, early part of that decade. And we went to one college on the border of Ohio and Kentucky and West Virginia, Huntington University. And we were going to different professors presenting that we can give lectures in your classes. We would go to the professors of sociology, history, religion, philosophy, so many things like that. And every professor was really interested, but they said, you have to get the permission of the chairman of the religious department. If you get his permission, we'll be happy to have you. But the policy of the college is no one who speaks about any type of spirituality or religion can speak without the authorization of the chairman of the religion department. And when they spoke about him, they would practically offer their dandavats. And they told us about him. He was such a scholar of Christianity. Not only that, he was a preacher. He was an ordained minister. And he would give powerful academic lectures and inspirational lectures in all the churches and cathedrals. He would be invited to synagogues to give his lectures. So we approached him. And he denied us the right. He said, no, I will not allow you. And then he said, I don't believe that your God is God, so I can't let you mislead people. So we got in a whole philosophical debate for probably a couple hours whether Krishna could be God. Yes? And then he had to go somewhere. He said, come back tomorrow and we'll continue our debate. So we come back tomorrow, And it was really strange. We go into his office. Do you know what a sun lamp is? It's a lamp that somehow makes you get the color as if you're under the sun. Because these American kinds of people are sometimes really white in color. And for them, beauty is to have dark complexion. Really. For Americans, white is ugly. You have to have a white... It's very beautiful to be tan. Like an Indian. In India, they feel if you're white, it's very beautiful. It's not nice to be dark. But in America, if you're dark, it's very beautiful. It's not nice to be white. Yes? So the sun lamp is, even in the winter, you can get nice suntan and get nice brownish complexion by laying under a sun lamp. So I went into his office, and he's laying naked on a big table. It wasn't a bed, it was just like a table. He was laying naked with nothing on, no, not even copens. Under sun lamps. And he said, yes, let us continue our debate. I told him, you know, I told him there's too many distractions for me to do. So, after you get your suntan, we'll debate. So he said, all right, all right. So for a couple days, we couldn't give any lectures. All we could do is debate with him. And finally, all of his arguments were quite defeated. And he said to me, I want to confide in you. Something I've never told anyone in my whole life. He said, there is no God. I said, where did you read that, you know? You're giving lectures in all these churches. You're writing books about God. And you don't believe there's God? He said, I teach it, I lecture it, because it's my profession. Because it's my speciality. It's what made me famous. It's my occupation. But I can tell you honestly, I don't believe a word of it. And interesting enough, do you know what his name was? Professor Maybe. I said, don't you think that even maybe, your name is Maybe, maybe there's a God? He said, no, no. But then the amazing thing is he said, well, your God, whatever, it really doesn't matter, so you might as well give lectures. So he wrote a sanctioning. So then we got to go in all the classes. So yes, it's not so difficult to understand things intellectually, but it takes the grace of God to really have faith. And that is why Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, Srila Prabhupada, they emphasize that faith comes by hearing and serving in the association of devotees, people who have faith.
Lord Nityananda, I will give you love of God through Harinam. The only price is your faith. Adosha datata sadhu sangota vajanakriya. The very basis, the beginning of our whole spiritual life is the foundation of faith. In the beginning, there's just a little bit of faith. Perhaps due to some agyata sukriti, perhaps due to some past life, there's some little faith. Faith in the sublime nature of God beyond this material world. And Krishna reciprocates with that faith from within the heart and directs us to the association of devotees where that faith could be nourished, cultivated, and ultimately it becomes bhava and prema through the process of devotional service. If you want a justification to enjoy this world, be the controller and the proprietor according to the mode of nature and the intensity of your desire, the Paramatma, who is unlimited, could perform the most incredible miracles with your consciousness. These terrorists, I would think that they really believe what they're saying. They really believe that if you kill these people, you will get the rewards in heaven. Innocent people, women, children, even people of your own religion, if they happen to be walking by, that doesn't matter. They believe that. God gives them that perversion intelligence. If you really want to get away with something, Paramat will give you the faith that you can get away with it. Even though it's absolutely crazy. Yes? People see how drugs destroy people's lives. Heroin, cocaine. I was told it's becoming really fashionable here in Bombay. Cocaine. It's one of the most malicious, dangerous, horrible, life-ruining drugs ever. In the West, we have seen so many people, lives are absolutely destroyed because they become addicted to this cocaine. You see it. You hear about it. Why would anyone want to do it? Feels good. Because the Paramatma just completely warps their intelligence. Take this heroin, take this cocaine, you're going to suffer, you're going to become addicted, you're going to die, and you're thinking, no, not me. Maybe everybody else, but not me. And you do it. Absolutely no sense at all. The only way anyone could do those things after seeing and hearing what's going on is the Paramatma has to completely cover your intelligence. And why does he cover your intelligence? Because that's what you want. Otherwise, you can't enjoy it. So, Hiranyakashipu, how much he was covered over. Duryodhana, how he was covered over. Seeing the universal form. Seeing Lord Narasimhadev and still thinking, I will win. Hare Krishna. So Hiranyakashipu is theoretically speaking very nice philosophy. And Srila Prabhupada in purport is describing how
His audience was very receptive because they were miserable. One of the greatest distresses is when your loved ones die. Now, Hiranyaksha, probably no one in this room feels any sympathy toward him. But everything is relative. To his wife and his mother, he was the greatest person on earth. He was simply wonderful. That's the Paramatma, doing his work, giving people a particular intelligence, a particular knowledge according to their particular motivations. And Prabhupada describes one is very much interested in philosophy at a funeral. When one is sobbing and weeping, because death is so final, there's just nothing you could do about it. Other types of distress, you can always have the hope that I could fix it and make it better. Yes? You lose money, we'll try again, we'll make it back. You lose your health, well, I'll go to this clinic and I'll do this diet and I'll somehow or other try to get it back. Practically anything in this world you lose, you can get it back. There's hope. But when someone that you love is dead, there is no hope. It's finished. You can never get them back. It's final. So it's really deep pain for one who has attachment. And this final thing called death is such a mystery. People naturally are inclined toward philosophically understanding what is it and why and who am I? At that point when you're seeing the same body looking the same way as it did when it was asleep, but the person's gone. It's so obvious that he never was his body. What is this thing called death? Why are we destroying the body? Somewhere deep down inside, everyone has to think like this, consciously or unconsciously. But unfortunately, after the intensity of the experience, we go back to our materialistic way of life. And therefore, Srila Prabhupada is citing Queen Kunti. Better to stay in distress. Because when you're in distress, you turn to God if you have some piety. And even these impious people were turning to philosophy. But when happiness again comes, when the distress is relieved, the tendency is again just to go back into your normal routine of materialistic ways. So Queen Kunti, Prabhupada quotes, she's saying that I prefer distress over happiness. How many of you could honestly say that? You all know what distress is about. We're not talking about, you know, getting, a fly landing in your head and bothering you a little. We're talking distress. Queen Kunti was talking about real distress, a mother's love. Her husband is cursed. That's pretty distressful, isn't it? Her husband is cursed. He's supposed to be the king, but because of this curse, he gives up his right to the kingdom and goes to the forest. That's distress. And then he makes a mistake. And just one mistake. It wasn't like he was planning the mistake. It wasn't like he was, you know, writing out a whole strategic plan of how to do this thing. He was just weak for a moment. And in that weakness of the moment, he just made a mistake that he didn't even really want to do. And because of that, well, before that, he was cursed. Then he dies. And she's got these five children, three of her own and two. And in those days, the death of a husband was serious distress. Most women, they would rather burn in the funeral pyre with their husband than live. It was too painful to live without him. And that's the way she was. She wanted to do that. Madri did it. But all the sages and rishis said, no, no, you have to stay to take care of these children. So she stayed. She's a widow. Then she goes back to Hastinapur, and then she sees this whole conflict with Duryodhana, Dushasana, Dhritarashtra, and they're spreading all horrible things against her children. It was really serious political atmosphere. Now, you know how complicated and frustrating politics could be. Yes? Even if there's just a little politics in the brahmachari ashram, it causes havoc. What? There's politics at home causes so much distress, especially to the parents when there's politics between the children. And what is politics? It usually means they're competing over who gets proprietorship or control over something. That's what politics is about. Competition over control and power and ownership. Tears a parent's heart to see that. Can you imagine the politics in that palace with Dhritarashtra, Duryodhana, Dushasana, Shakuni? These are really intense, malicious, brilliant politicians. Yes? The politicians today, they're like junior nursery school in comparison. These were powerful people. And little Kunti is just seeing all this politics, hearing all this politics, and all these plans to kill her children and banish her children and blaspheme her children. And so many things at that house of lack. Yes? The Kurus, there's a nice house we built. Go on vacation, enjoy, relax very nicely. And they go. Bhima's wondering, what's the motive? What's the motive? Vidura tells them, they're planning to burn it down and kill you. Kunti's there in the house, waiting for the message when they were going to do it. And then they have to, with her children, she's escaping underground in some tunnel. Yes. Bhima made this tunnel. It was a long tunnel. And they're just going through this tunnel and hiding underground, and then they come out and they have to be hiding incognito. Horrible. And then she gets the news that Bhima's dead, thrown in the water. They poisoned him. And then some snakes bit him and neutralized the poison. Very nice. And so many things. And then ultimately the gambling match. And they're banished to the forest, 12 years. How she suffered. That's distress. Just one thing after another. And she's praying to Krishna when everything's good. The war's over. The Pandavas are kings. Everyone loves them. And Krishna coronates. He's there for the coronation of Yudhisthira. And then he's going back to Dwarka. And Kunti is praying, let the calamities come. Because when the calamities come, we could only turn to you and you were always here with us. Now things are very nice. We won't be crying out for you anymore. And therefore we'll forget you. You see, it's not just a matter of remembering Krishna. It's a matter of remembering Krishna with feeling. We can say Hare Krishna, or we could cry out Hare Krishna. Yes? When things are nice and happy, the tendency is when you chant your rounds, you get them done. Yes? But when there's serious danger, or intense distress, or situations just beyond our control, do you find yourself more attentive when you're chanting your rounds? Do you find yourself really crying out for mercy? Krishna reciprocates as we approach him. If we want mercy to the degree we intensely cry out for mercy, Krishna gives us mercy. So amazing. Everyone is looking for happiness, except Kunti Devi. She's telling, I prefer distress over happiness. Because all I want is Krishna, that's all. Happiness, distress, these are all illusions. The only reality is Krishna. The only happiness is Krishna. Krishna wants to give us supreme happiness. The reason Krishna puts us in distress is because he wants to give us supreme happiness. He wants us to rise above the happiness and distress of this world. Now, when we get put through those distressful situations, we should remember that. And when even everything is very nice and going just according to our wish, and we're very happy, we should still take shelter of Krishna, knowing the lesson I've learned. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his devotees, they were in the highest bliss, and they were taking shelter of Krishna. But the tendency for most of us is this this philosophizing at the cremation grounds. When the distress is there, we really understand the urgency. Only Krishna can save me. But then when things become normal, we become abnormal. We forget. And then again, we just routine. That is one of the reasons association with devotees is so important. Because in the association of devotees, even if everything's really blissful and everything nice, still we hear. We hear how we have to take shelter of Krishna. When we read Prabhupada's books, he keeps reminding us about the miseries of material existence. Yes? And in doing so, we find the joy of Krishna. Prabhupada says, for a devotee, distress is an opportunity to remember the Supreme Personality of Godhead constantly. Is there any questions? Yes.
Haribol Maharaj. Maharaj, I face this problem very regularly because many devotees, they come to talk with me for some counseling for finance. So, as you said very clearly, that association of the devotees is the most important thing for a sincere devotee. Now, many devotees, specifically from last 3-4 years in India, because of very huge economical development that has taken place, the house in Bombay or even in Pune also has increased the rate, the price of the real estate has increased by 3 times. The rate which was before 3 years back, even a small house to buy in Mira Road is around 4 lakh rupees. The same house is right now around 10 to 12 lakh rupees. Now those devotees are really sincere. They really wanted to associate with the devotees. That's why they want to stay in Bombay. They are not attached to Bombay. They don't want any pleasure or something for Bombay. But now to stay in Bombay itself has become so complicated and so difficult now. In that circumstances, we cannot even tell him because his financial situation is not that good. And even if you want to help us through our concern like Yamuna Kinare also, there also, Maharaj, it is not possible because he doesn't have that much repayment capacity also. In that situation, what this devotee should do in these circumstances?
He should take guidance from you. Does that answer your question?
I'm not able to guide them properly, Maharaj.
What?
I'm not able to guide them in a clear way. I just tell them you rely on Krishna. But they say that should we go away from Bombay? If you go away from Bombay, then what about our spiritual life?
It's a very good answer. I think the answer to that question, in general, is you should accept what is most favorable for your Krishna consciousness. Now, how that applies to each individual particularly, that will vary according to the particular situation of that person. But if one is very happy with the congregation in Bombay and everything like that, then, and one can somehow or other make ends meet so that one can execute Krishna consciousness very nicely in Bombay, then that's very good. But if it really becomes very, very difficult, then there are other places also that one could live and execute Krishna consciousness. But just try to go somewhere where there's nice association of devotees. Or you may have to live real simple. It's a question if you're willing to make that trade, to live real simple, to have the opportunity, then you can do that also. But actually we have seen that devotees from the congregation, practically anywhere they go, they're very, very exemplary and very Krishna conscious, and they make very good advancement. So many have gone to America, Australia, Europe, because they're sent there for jobs. And I see most all of them are doing just as well in their Krishna consciousness because they take the mood and they keep communication with devotees here. They keep really nice communication. They feel separation from Radha Gopinath. The training that they receive, they take with them. And they're oftentimes doing excellent service for Lord Chaitanya's mission at different centers around the world. Sometimes prominent preachers in those centers. And they find nice association of devotees. So if a person's sincere, even if they have to leave Bombay, if they take that spirit they have received with them and keep nice communication, they grow. And oftentimes they do much greater service than they would if they were here. Yes? Govinda Prabhu, you have seen? They travel around, Gaur Gopal Prabhu, Gauranga Prabhu. Sometimes they want to come back to Bombay. We say, no, no, better you stay here. Here you're a prominent person pushing on Lord Chaitanya's movement. Come back and you'll just be one of the thousands of people doing a little service. Huh? So if a person really, really wants to remain here and they're willing to make the ends meet to have a fulfilling life here, then that's wonderful. But if they're being sent away due to their work or due to economic situations, if they're sincere, they'll make wonderful advancement in Krishna consciousness. Hare Krishna. Does that answer your question? Is there any other questions? Yes, Madhavananda Prabhu.
Maharaj, this is regarding the faith which you spoke. One is the understanding and
whose cell phone is that? Whose cell phone? It's a very nice melody. Bhaktivinod Thakur's cell phone. All praise to you. Reminded all of us of Lord Nityananda Prabhu. Best part of the class, actually. Yes.
So we meet sometimes very simple people, like villagers, and they have such a natural faith. They can relate to, you know, things, pastimes about Krishna, Mahaprabhu, very, very genuinely. And then, this is my own case, I compare myself that, you know, intellectually I'm reading books and understanding the philosophy, but I do not have even the fraction of that kind of what you will call as a faith as an emotion. It's naturally there. So how do we go from this intellectual side to the faith as an emotion? Actually, you believe it.
You are a Vaishnav. Therefore, you are seeing everyone else better than you. But I'm sorry to disappoint you. by saying, you actually have very good faith. You have dedicated your life. You have put your life on the line in the service of Krishna. It takes some real faith to do that. These people may have a very simplistic type of faith, but oftentimes their faith is not in the right thing. And when it comes right down to it, their faith is very sentimental. They're not really willing to put their life on the line for it. Yes? So it's nice to think that everyone has more faith than us. But objectively, when we observe you, you're living with tremendous faith. And the nature of a devotee is to see their disqualifications more than their qualifications. To see our lack of faith more than the faith that God has given us. But yes, many of these village people, if they come in contact with proper devotees and get some good guidance, then that natural simplistic faith in God can really bring them toward the ultimate perfection. But for many, their faith is based on a lot of misconceptions. Yes? They'll hear Krishna's pastimes, and then they'll think that, and then they'll, that Krishna and all the demigods, there's really no difference. And so many superstitions. And ultimately, I'm God. They don't really know whether they're God or not God, but maybe I'm God because people tell me I'm God. So they have nice faith. But unless that faith is directed by parampara, then it's usually misguided. But if they are properly connected, then that simple, sweet faith is a very, very great blessing. Now, we may be more intellectual, more philosophical, but the fact that we're seeing that quality of faith in them, and we want that quality of simple faith of the heart, it means we're really sincere. And that means you're very much on the path of real faith. But simple living, high thinking. Even if we're in a complicated situation due to our livelihood and our occupation, we should try to be very simple at heart. That means without duplicity. To be humble. To recognize and admit our shortcomings. And to call out for help. The problem is because we're intellectual, or because we have some high position, we become proud. And if we're proud, we can't humbly cry out for God to give us that faith. Oftentimes these villagers, they have very little, so they're humble. They have very little to be proud of. And they're grateful for whatever they get. And faith is nourished by that humility and that gratitude. And that simplicity is really their opulence if they have proper guidance. Whereas for those who have positions or wealth or prestige or knowledge, the tendency is we become proud. When we're proud, we're not so grateful. We're not grateful for little things. And faith cannot really grow properly in a proud heart. So we should learn from their simplicity and try to apply it to our life as far as possible. Yudhisthira Maharaj was very simple, even though he was a king. Prataparudra Maharaj was very simple, although he was a king. They were very simple and they were very humble. Rupa and Sanatan were prime ministers. They were very simple and humble. So that is an essential virtue for a Vaishnava, is that simplicity, that humility, that gratitude. So that conviction is transferred from the logic of the brain to the faith of the heart. Does that answer your question? Any of the senior brahmacharis want to add anything? No brahmacharis think they're seniors, so nobody will say anything. They're very simple. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Thank you very much.